This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello, and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, The Universe in Motion, expanding series and reader opinions in speculative fiction.
Now, this episode has been prompted by a series of different things, but I think one of the main ones is probably the latest release of the Crimes of Grindelwald. Or Grindelwald.
Grindelwald.
Grindelwald. Which is obviously the latest installment in the Harry Potter universe. Now, Jules has seen this, and I haven't. So this is not going to be, we're not going to really be going over any spoilers this episode, but obviously the episode was inspired by it, so it will be discussed.
Yeah. Let's start from the position of Fantastic Beasts and where to find them, because I really liked that film, and you didn't like it quite as much, did you?
Hey, no, that's not true. I loved it.
Am I thinking of... I thought you perhaps weren't as impressed. Who am I thinking? I know my sister, who is a massive Potterhead, it was kind of like, yeah, I didn't really like it. And Alan, who's always been a fan, was kind of like, not a lot happens in it. He wasn't bothered about it, but he really enjoyed the second one. But I could have sworn you said you didn't like it quite as much as some of the others. I could be wrong.
No. Sorry. Yeah, you have remembered that wrong, because I loved Fantastic Beasts. I thought it was great. If I then go back and listen to old episodes where I'm like, yeah, I fucking hated it.
No, that's clearly me. I do apologise. Yeah, I really loved it. But I was surprised when I got some disparaging opinions about the first film. And a lot of it seems to come down to the fact that people felt it wasn't true to the original series in its spirit. Now, Harry Potter's a bit contentious because, okay... The first book was written over 20 years ago now, and people have complained about it not being inclusive or representative enough, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. And, okay, yeah, it's true. But on the other hand, pushing somebody to retcon things after they've already been written is also not the way to go. And there is definitely a movement of people who seem to go after the really big scalps, the really big pelts in the publishing industry. And I'm not entirely sure their motives are pure in that respect. I mean, it's fine to say, well, yeah, I loved Harry Potter, but I couldn't find myself in that universe. If you're then sort of making a name for yourself as a book blogger by deconstructing something that cannot be rewritten at this point because it is too well known, then I think you really need to question your motives. And I'm not defending the fact that, for example, one of the things that people didn't like was J.K. Rowling said, oh, I always thought of Dumbledore as gay, which was an offhand comment. It wasn't supposed to be a case of, oh, no, I included a gay character.
Yeah.
But everybody took that as to say, no, I've been representative. And she was just merely saying, well, no, I always thought he was gay. But, you know, it was a middle grade children's book. So it wasn't at that particular time when it was published, it was not considered appropriate to actually include that to the level that people... In their teens and 20s and later on actually wanted it included. So, yeah. And I think that's the thing that's happened a little bit with Fantastic Beasts, and some of the blowback on the Crimes of Grindelwald has been similar in the sense of, you know, by now you should know better, you should be more inclusive, etc., etc., forgetting the fact that she doesn't actually have a lot of say on the casting.
Yeah.
She can indicate a preference, but she can't actually say, no, we must be absolutely clear on this. And also there's a lot of Hollywood pressures there as well as to what you can include and what you can't include. It's no spoiler to say that the relationship between Dumbledore and Grindelwald is actually hinted at, and both Alan and I came out of the cinema and said they could have been a bit more explicit there, we think. You know, it's definitely there in the subtext, but we felt that more could have been made of it. And we felt it was kind of a Hollywood pressure type thing not to make it more overt than it was.
Yeah.
For example. But the this does open up the can of worms, sorry to go on, the can of worms whereby people have a beloved fandom and some of us have don't touch fandoms, where it's a case of it's actually very stressful to think of anything else being added to that fandom, that series, that world, because if it tilts it out of balance and ruins the world that you loved, that was your special place to escape to, then it's too much. And this has happened with things like the rebooting of the Star Trek films, particularly for a friend of mine who is very, very, very wed to the original Trek series. And, you know, that was her escape. That was her place to go when life was basically a bit shit and she needed somewhere to go where she felt she could be herself. And it was Star Trek, and that's fine. We've all felt like that about something. And I can kind of understand the whole sort of, please don't retcon it, please don't reimagine it, please don't give me a new version of it, because you're taking away something that's really precious to me.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. But I also like to point out that when you expand a universe in that way, you're not erasing what came before. And I've been on both sides of this. You know, I've definitely felt that, oh God, why can't you just leave it? I'll look at that point of view in a second. But it's not like when we do a reboot, automatically all of the past versions are just removed. Like someone breaks into your house and like, you're not allowed to have this anymore.
That's
Here's
it.
The new version, and they just steal it away like some inverse Santa. Okay, that's not what happens. You can still have whatever you want. And I think the only things that people don't like is they're like, yeah, but it's annoying, because then when I, you know, want to get in touch with the community and talk to them about it, it's just filled with the new stuff, not the old stuff, and I can't find the original stuff. But, you know, there are ways around that. I mean, you have things like Old Who, for instance. You have New Who and Old Who, and people do separate them because people want them to be separated. And so a part of me is a little bit like, actually, don't do that. You can, and actually to the point that sometimes the new stuff brings new focus to some of the old stuff as well. So there are two sides to that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You will definitely be too young to remember this, but when The Next Generation, the second version of Star Trek, came out, I do actually remember it airing for the first time. I would have been about 9, I think. Mm. And obviously I'd watched the original series with my dad, because anything sci-fi I would have watched with my dad from the age of like 2 upwards. And I remember sort of inheriting this knee-jerk prejudice at the beginning, sort of like, well, you're not the actual Star Trek, the proper, really real Star Trek. And there was this big sort of, you know, Trekkers versus Trekkies. And if you were a Trekker, you liked the original and therefore you were a proper fan. And if you were a Trekkie, then you liked the new stuff. And that meant you weren't a real fan. And some of that even trickled down to me at sort of 9 years old. My dad's just like, it's good sci-fi. I'm happy if you just give me good sci-fi. I don't really care.
Yeah.
So I ended up watching a lot of anyway and finding that I was revising my opinion on the way to the fact that I was actually quite enjoying the new series.
Oh, Picard. It is Picard, isn't it?
It is. It is Picard. And he was one of the best captains. And some of The Next Generation is really clunky if you go back and watch it now. But it, you know, it still has a special place in my heart. And obviously it got rebooted in various different ways, with Deep Space Nine, with Voyager, with Enterprise, which is actually kind of a prequel, with the latest Star Trek series, which is aired on Netflix, which again is almost a complete reboot set around the time of Enterprise, which is sort of pre-original Star Trek. And you can love all of it. You can see the flaws and say, that was a bad bit of retconning there. You saw a plot hole, you tried to fill it in, and you actually kind of made it worse because you drew attention to it with, you know, shiny white plaster and a grey wall that had been there forever and nobody had noticed that hole. But you kind of have to have a bit of affection for the flaws as well. On the other hand, I will admit that Star Trek is not one of my don't touch fandoms. And the stress, the sheer physical stress I felt going to see first The Force Awakens and second The Last Jedi I'm serious. I desperately wanted to see them because I love Star Wars, and Star Wars was a big don't touch fandom for me. But I was sat there in the cinema, really tense. And I think I went to see both films at the cinema. I went to see both films at the cinema twice. The first time was so I could see it and say, okay, I know what's going to happen now, and now I can relax and actually watch it. And the second time was to actually,
enjoy it.
And I know that's pathetic. I understand it. But, and I can be a little bit like that with Harry Potter as well. Yeah, as in, please don't spoil it for me.
I think a lot of people were like, please don't spoil it for me. And I think maybe, because I also went to see, and I know you've seen it too, The Cursed Child.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably as close as I came to, oh God, please don't spoil it for me. Because it was the characters that I knew and that I loved and that had been established. And I never felt that much when it came to the Fantastic Beasts series. Because first of all, the first one is set in America.
Yeah.
So it was a completely new setting. And it didn't have any characters who we really knew, to be honest. It was all new set of characters, and whilst, you know, the lore was some of the same because of the new setting, because of the different rules and all these things, it was really, really interesting. And I'm really keen to see the next one, because obviously they are going to be bringing in some of the elements of Harry Potter into this, at the very least, because we're going to have Dumbledore in it. And also because, is McGonagall in it? I saw this whole controversy where people were like, you can't have McGonagall in it, she wasn't born. And I thought, well, maybe it's McGonagall's mother. I don't know, is it actually McGonagall?
You don't hear her called Minerva McGonagall, so perhaps she is. But I mean, if you look at some, if you go on Pottermore, the website, there is a bit about McGonagall's, Professor McGonagall's background. She actually was quite old. And she had a tragic backstory where she went into teaching because the wizard she hoped to marry died.
Yeah, and also, because originally she fell in love with a human, but she couldn't be with him.
Yeah.
So she just left, and then I think he also died, and then the wizard that she was going to be with also died. Like, she's not had a very good time of it.
No, she went into teaching, and that's how she found her fulfillment. And she's obviously not a young teacher when we meet her in the first Harry Potter book, is she?
Yeah. And wizards do live longer than humans, it's kind of proven.
Yeah.
But, yeah, from the dates that she was supposed to have been born, she shouldn't have actually, it shouldn't have been possible for her to be in, you know, Fantastic Beasts, which just makes me go, yeah, shouldn't have been possible, because, like, time travel doesn't exist.
Yeah, and the rest of it's just fine.
Yeah, like, everything else is totally plausible. And also, we've got a McGonagall. I'm like, you don't know that it's her.
No, she might come from a long line of McGonagall.
Yeah, it could be her mother. It could be, you know, it could be another McGonagall. It could be her aunt. You don't know. Anyway, so I'm interested to see it. I'm avoiding people talking about it too much because I don't want to be affected, because I can get really affected by people's opinions, and I just kind of want to see it and enjoy it, and I think that I am going to enjoy it, and I am really looking forward to it, because I'm now invested in Newt as a character. When it came to The Cursed Child, I had a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, because I was just worried that the characters were going to become caricatures of themselves. And in some ways they sort of did. Like, I just felt Ron was so useless.
Yeah,
in The Cursed Child. I felt like any character that he'd had that I loved in the books had just been wiped away.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I like Rupert Grint as Ron in the films, but you could clearly tell with the play that they had gone with that Ron, that version, the one who is a bit of an idiot.
Yeah, bit of an idiot instead of, you know, relief. Yeah, the stealth, you know, instead of, you know, the one who was actually good with plans and you know, strategy and things like that.
Excellent chess player, for example.
Excellent chess player, yeah, very ambitious. yeah, he definitely had his problems, but they all did. And yeah, I just felt it was a real shame that we didn't get that. So I think that was probably the closest I came to knee-jerk reaction in that respect.
I really didn't like what they did with Ginny either, because if you look at the backstory of Ginny in those sort of 20 years or whatever, she played for the Holyhead Harpies, she became the team captain, she went off and did all these wonderful things. She didn't just marry Harry and have children. And that's how you presented her in The Cursed yeah. Child. And also, she's not as funny, she's not as witty, she's not as cool and laid back as she was. And I know we change, but you don't lose all of that from your character as you get older.
No. I mean, to be honest, I think another reason I maybe came into it a little bit, you know, feeling a bit weird, was the fact that I didn't really like the end of the book, of the series. And it's not actually because, you know, of pairing or anything like that. I'm totally happy with Ron and Hermione together. I think they kind of fit together.
You mean the end of Deathly Hallows?
Yeah, end of Deathly Hallows. I mean, like, the whole thing with Harry, Ron and Hermione is it's kind of like Spock, Bones and Kirk. And if we follow that metaphor, that means that Bones and Kirk... sorry, Bones and Spock got together. But
it would explain the love-hate relationship, wouldn't it?
Definitely would. I actually don't have any problem with the pairings. I kind of liked it. But I do feel like we really missed out on some opportunities, which is that, first of all, I can totally get Harry going on to become an Auror, and Ron doing it as well and being like, yeah, that's great, that's fantastic. And then Ron retiring to go and help with the twins' joke shop. That kind of makes sense, actually. But Harry should have gone back to Hogwarts and become a Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher. Putting it out there.
I just wanted him to go back to Hogwarts and actually take Finish. His goddamn newts.
Yeah.
Okay, I know I'm a nerd, I know I'm a school nerd, but I was kind of like, for God's sake, do your bloody A-levels.
I mean, though to be honest, any job he applies for, who's going to say no to an application?
Let me think.
Harry Potter.
So you've had a short but illustrious career defeating the darkest wizard of all time. No, we're not going to give you the job, son. So yes, it does make sense in that respect, but it's still incredibly frustrating.
On the one side, I can totally get why he didn't want to return, but on the other side, I think that he should have become Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher, if only to totally spite Voldemort.
It's not cursed anymore, damn it.
Take that, Tom!
Although I can kind of see... On the other hand, he did enjoy teaching the DA, didn't he?
He was really good at it, yeah. And that was actually one thing that they did quite well in the films, was that when Harry's teaching the DA, they kind of changed his wardrobe a little bit, so that it would reflect Lupin.
Yeah.
And the whole idea was that, yeah, he's channeling Lupin in that moment. And I just think that, yes, that would have been actually a really great idea. Because I think that he would have made a really good Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher. I mean, I like to imagine that as an Auror, he did come back to the school every year. They got him in to give a
talk. To
do a special seminar. And I've seen a great comic, which is just someone saying... Mr. Potter, would you duel Professor McGonagall? McGonagall just goes, Mr. Potter doesn't have time for things like that. And you just see Harry rolling up his sleeves. He's like, anything for education, Professor. And the look on his face isn't, I'm going to beat Professor McGonagall. It's like, oh, I can't wait to be beaten by Professor McGonagall.
That's awesome.
I like to imagine that, and I think also kind of with the end of the series, because there was space between any new content, it kind of meant that people have the chance and the time to really come up with their own ideas of what would happen, and it's probably because of that time. That there was such a strong reaction to The Cursed Child coming out. And on the one side, people were very happy to have more of the content. On the other side, people were really, really unnerved by having more of the content, because the series hadn't actually ended in a way which was almost appropriate to have any more content. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think the thing was, had been such a huge runaway success that no one could have predicted that when J.K. Rowling got to the end of the series, I think she very understandably got to the point where she wanted to draw a line under it and say, no, because I don't want anyone to expect any more of me in this series. I think she actually said something like that in an interview, but much more diplomatically. And then obviously sort of 10 years goes by or whatever, and you start thinking, I did love those characters, and now I've had a bit of a break. I'd like to know what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And that's where it came from. I don't believe it was entirely money motivated or anything. But again, with The Cursed Child, I was sat there for the entire first play, because obviously it's a play in two parts.
Yeah.
So it's like 6 hours of theatre. And I was sat there stressed, really, really stressed, because I couldn't bear the thought that Harry wasn't getting on with his son. Which is why I read like 4 pages of the book, of the screenplay of Cursed Child, and then had to put the book down because I couldn't handle it. Which is incredibly sad, and that is not something that usually happens to me, but...
Yeah. No, I completely get it. I felt the same, actually. It was incredibly stressful, actually, and I really... Also because having gone through all of the things that they go through as the characters, you just want them to be happy. But the problem is, of course, that complete contentment isn't actually that interesting in terms of plot.
No. No, I mean, I'd be happy there, but it's that thing we've said before where you really love a set of characters, so you're happy just to watch them have coffee and, you know, play with the kids and the dog in the garden. But it's not actually that's not actually a gripping book. That's the little scenes you wrote afterwards to comfort yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I do definitely feel like they maybe took it to a bit of an extreme with the whole thing. Like, it really didn't need to be quite so much. I think there's definitely a big difference between Fantastic Beasts and The Cursed Child. So I think that's a really good example of when there's a space between the end of a series and the start of something set in the same universe. And actually, something really similar happened with Trudy Canavan.
Yes.
And her Dark Magician's trilogy. Because I read the first 3 books, and I loved them. And I've said this before, I sulked. I sulked after I finished the third one. I had the big, I think it was the first time ever that I had such a humongous book hangover. I literally couldn't do anything with myself. I felt genuinely kind of hollowed out by what had happened at the end of that book. And I kind of went onto her website to see if there was going to be any more stuff. And yes, there was. But she said, look, I need to take a break from this. I'm going to come back to it in a few years' time. And I was like, oh no, I really need that next book now.
Yeah.
And when the next series came out, I haven't read it. I haven't touched it, and I've had no desire to either. It's set a few years in the future, and I just suddenly thought,
you don't need that world anymore in the same way.
I don't need that world anymore, but also like I wasn't ready to risk it. Having completely fallen in love with these characters and things like that, I knew that. On the one, you know, I think the big problem for me is that you obviously see them go through this journey. But you know that, and you see them go through this journey and get, I say it's a happy ending. It's not really a happy ending.
No.
But they get somewhere. And then you know at the beginning that this is going to be a new series. And that at best you're only going to get little glimpses of these other characters. Or at worst, they're going to be there, but they're going to be back down again. If that makes sense. They're not going to be happy. And on the one side, you can't obviously have them being very happy. Because there needs to be a place to go. But I just didn't want to do it. I didn't want to climb back into these characters' lives after so long away. I kind of felt, not scandalized. It's not scandalized. You know, I'd really wanted this series a few years ago, but now I felt like I've recovered, and I can't do this again. I just can't do it again.
Yeah. See, I have actually read that trilogy, and I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't say I had the same level of emotional investment in the first one that you did. As in, I really enjoyed the first trilogy, and I've read it a couple of times, but it wasn't like... it didn't introduce me to anything new in fantasy. It just gave me more of what I knew I already liked. So therefore, I didn't have quite the same emotional investment. Although at the end of the third book, I was kind of like, you can't do
that. That ending just right in the heart. I felt like I'd been stabbed. I couldn't believe it. And again, I think the difference between us is that we are actually reading them at different periods of our lives.
Yeah, it's 13 years. That 13 years makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
As to where you come at a piece of fiction or media, I think.
Exactly. And also considering, again, you've read a lot more than I have. You know, even at the same age, you would have read a lot more than I would have. So actually, I think it was the first time I'd come across a gay character in fiction as well.
Actually, it was one of the first times I had in fantasy, and that's really, really terrible if you think about it. If you consider how much I'd read and the fact that I would have been, in my early 20s, I think, when I first read those books. Yeah, I would have been about 22, 23. So you must have been a wee little thing.
Yeah,
you found them much later.
No, I was 13.
Yeah, so it was just... that was one of the first times I ever had seen, you know, an openly gay character and character relationship, because it just didn't get published. Anyway, that's an aside, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and that was one of the things that sort of like, oh, that caught me, kind of thing. So I lent the books to my dad after that as well.
Yeah, but I just, you know, I think his name is Daniel. Is that his name?
Yes, I think so.
I actually, Daniel in the Hamartia cycle is named in honour of Daniel from the Trudy Canavan series. I called her Crudy Tranavan. Oops. the Trudy Canavan series. But yeah, I was really, it really affected me when I read it. And then I couldn't go back. And I think it was mostly because of Daniel. But also because obviously with Sonia, and spoiler alert guys, but because of Akarin's death, I suddenly thought, I don't actually want to read this in a world where Akarin isn't there and there's some kind of angst with his son. Does that make sense?
Yeah, see, I thought that, but I tried it anyway, and I found Lorkin a little bit of a wet character anyway. But he was all right, he was entertaining enough, and the plot is okay. It's not as gripping as the first three books. It is a different story. She hasn't just retold the same thing.
Yeah.
But some of the characters you know and love do some very questionable things. And obviously they've changed. It's 20 years down the line. Things are different. Sonia's now like 38, I think. Having said that, I felt that about Akarin as well. And yet the person Sonia actually ends up with is unusual. And I can see people being like really furious about it. But it really worked for me. And it was one of the few times that something got under my guard and really made me ship a couple, however unlikely it was.
Okay, can you, complete spoilers, but can you tell me who it is?
I can, it's Regin.
Wait, as in
the person who made her life hell.
To be honest, I can totally see that, actually. That makes total sense, since he made her life a total hell, but you know that he was kind of...
It's really, really well done.
I can definitely see him developing feelings for her.
He has a very, very unhappy marriage. His wife cheats on him, betrays him, steals a lot of his money, and, you know, just generally does not treat him very well. He still acts honourably despite everything because he's subscribed to this upper class philosophy, and it was an arranged marriage. He treats his children very well, and eventually he gets permission to divorce his wife. Mm-hmm. And it's only then, after all that's happened, that he's been working with Sonia really closely in her hospice and doing various other things. He goes along as her bodyguard when she's sent on a mission, because as the Black Magician, she's not actually allowed to go anywhere except the hospice. But finally, they start lifting that ban for her a little bit. And they end up getting on really well. And Sonia's really unsure to start with, and then decides, well, you know, this was 20 years ago, and actually he can't hurt me because I'm a much stronger magician than he is. And they form a friendship, and it goes on from there, and Regan never pushes her on anything. And finally, it gets to the point where he's actually saying, I was kind of waiting for you to come around to the idea. I thought I'd have more luck with you if I sort of crept up on you and you saw that I'm a different person now than I was, than the really insecure mage student who made your life hell because secretly I kind of admired you.
Yeah.
So it wasn't all just I liked you. It's like I didn't know any better than to hate you because you were what you were. You were someone who was naturally talented and you shouldn't have been because you came from the wrong class. But I've learned that a lot of what I learned growing up was bollocks and I'm a different person. And it was just really sweet.
Aww.
So, yeah, it really worked for me. But I can see other people going, no, 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 no. He made her life hell.
I'm still not going to read it.
Yeah. He really bullied her. You know, there can be no coming back from that kind of thing. And because some people don't want characters to have a genuine redemption.
Yeah.
As we've seen from other series.
Though he does actually get a little bit of redemption within the actual series, the first three books, because he does actually help them when the rogue magicians do appear.
Well, I mean, I can't remember his name, but her mentor's son who was interested in her.
Yeah, because I thought that he might be another candidate.
Well,
that was a little bit too obvious.
He tries to strike up an affair with her and Sonya says, yes, but you're married now. And he said, yeah, but it was a mistake. And she likes living in the country and I would rather be in the city. And Sonya said, well, if I started doing anything with you, then I wouldn't like myself very much. I don't want to be the other woman. So she sends him away. But he does try it on, sort of, as in, we don't have to tell my wife about it.
Oh, that's not good. His father would be so disappointed.
But the one that actually did kind of upset me was the way that Daniel and, I can't remember his name, Tayand?
Yeah, Tayand or something like that.
Yeah, the way their relationship goes. And it's believable, but it's also a bit...
Yeah, because I know they break up and then there's also... You know, I just... They were happy. I'm going to let them be happy in my memory.
I was like, leave it alone. Don't.
Just let them. Like, why do things have to fall apart? Just let me have this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, okay. So there are some examples of universes which kind of have been expanded upon over time, sort of following in a similar storyline. I kind of want to talk to you about universes now, which have been expanded on, not following... a storyline of a kind of one family or anything like that, but actually following different sort of different characters. We have the MCU, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is obviously not the first shared universe because the whole comics, you know,
yeah.
Marvel Comics and DC Comics, these are shared universes with all these amazing characters. And it can get a bit confusing because, you know, there's consistency problems and you have different spin-offs and different universes within those universes and they keep being reset every 6 months because someone triggers the apocalypse. You know, so you have these things. So we obviously have the comics, but I think that's so complicated that we'd need to have a whole episode just looking at DC Comics alone. And even with that, we'd have to really narrow it down. So we're not going to talk about the comics, but I do want to talk about some of the film versions that we see now. So starting with the MCU, this was considered... this was pretty big, and it starts with Iron Man. And it's really crazy to suddenly remember that all of these movies... are set in the same world, and not only are the movies set in the same world, the TV series, Jessica Jones, The Defenders, they're all set in the same world as well.
Yeah.
And the way that they've kind of managed this is that obviously when it comes to the Avengers, there's this whole sort of, right, we're kind of meeting up, but otherwise we're all separated. Until you get to the, you know, I'm going to say it, the clusterfuck that was Civil War, where it was like, is this a Captain America movie or is this a an Avengers movie?
Yeah, fair point.
But for the most part, they were kind of separated, apart from the very intrinsic characters who, you know, who are known to kind of work together, because there's already a set universe where they do work together. So the Avengers are actually already established in the same way that the X-Men are established. But it also means that you can have things like Ant-Man, and you can have smaller kind of characters who can pop into the bigger movies, but can also safely be held further away.
Yeah.
But at this point, you know, they were building towards something big, which is where we're at now. So all of these characters have kind of come together. So taking a step away from that, I think we should probably talk about the Defenders.
Yep.
So obviously this starts with Matthew Murdock, Daredevil, the first series, very well received, following on with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. And finally, you know.
Iron Fist. The second season of Iron Fist started to finally go somewhere, and then it got cancelled.
I'm not even going to watch it. I haven't even been able to watch season two of Luke Cage.
It was okay, but to be honest, the awful thing is, I don't really like this. I think the character's interesting, but it just doesn't grip my attention the way the style they've gone for, I think.
Yeah, because it's weird, because I really liked the first season of Luke Cage, but the second season just hasn't done it for me.
No, it's
yeah.
Has Luke Cage been cancelled as well?
Yeah,
I think they both have, haven't they?
Yeah, they've both been cancelled.
I mean, it's kind of a shame with Iron Fist, because okay, I sort of sat through the second series, and then it got to the last episode, and I'm like, oh my god, this looks like it's going somewhere really interesting. Finally.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's also a bit of a shame because even Daredevil season two had a bit of a lull.
Yeah. The third season of Daredevil is way better.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's because it kind of went back to its roots a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're all very separate. But every now and again, they kind of have references and cameos sort of with one another. I mean, like, Iron Fist does actually appear in Luke Cage, which makes sense, because once again, this is an established universe where the two of them, even within already the established Defenders universe, do team up. They're really good friends in the comics. It's not so believable on screen, because, again, Iron Fist. Oh, I'm sorry, it's just, they really did not cast that right. And it's nothing against the actor. Like, I think he's doing the best job that he can, given everything.
Mediocre character and a mediocre script.
Yeah, but, like, they just did not cast that right. They did not do Danny Rand as a character justice. There was no chemistry between him and Luke Cage, which was a real shame, because their friendship is a big part of, you know, of their story arc. The two of them are incredibly close with one another. So it was a real shame to kind of be robbed of that. But regardless, they had this crossover within the Defenders. And obviously they did have that series where they all came together, which wasn't as good as it should have been.
No, it was kind of rushed. Weirdly,
it was rushed, yeah.
It sort of took about four episodes to get going, and then everything was crammed into the last two.
Yeah, and it's on the one side you're like, I don't understand. On the one side, you're like, okay, they were trying to do quite a lot. But the first Avengers movie, I didn't feel like it was rushed.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of characters there. You know?
Yes.
And up until this point, you know, actually, we had already had series which established all of these characters. So I think it could have been written better. I mean, I still enjoyed it, but I think it could have been handled better, and I feel like it was just in that uncomfortable space of not going fast enough and going too fast, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
Which meant that it just wasn't very exciting, which is a real shame, again, because it is really, really, they're all exciting characters, potentially. I'm sorry, I'm so bitter. But we just didn't get a lot of that. But what I really, really want now is, even though Luke Cage and Iron Fist have been cancelled, I would like them to appear every now and again in other episodes. Like, not as, you know, just as guest stars in other episodes. In the same way that I really, really like just to see a Jessica Jones and Daredevil crossover for an episode.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree with you there.
I just think it would be awesome. Because now this, it's been established they're living in the same world. It would just be nice to actually see them bump into each other, as it were, without it being the giant, oh God, the world is literally ending kind of.
That's where things like Ant-Man really worked, though, because it told a smaller story within a bigger universe. And I think that's why Marvel has been so enduring, is the fact that, obviously with the comics and things as well, they've had lots and lots of writers that Stan Lee, R.I.P. Stan Lee, who said, no, come in and write, come and play in my playground. If I like it, then you're in, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have these ideas and let's see what you can do with them. And I really like that.
Yeah. And I really, really like that as well. And it's why actually sort of one of the really positive sides of all of these, you know, different TV series that we're getting from Marvel has come out is that the universe is so big. You can have, you know, different corners of it. And it is funny that, you know, remember when the Defenders, they're all in the same city. That's the bit that really amuses me. But
that
they
just
kind of
makes
like
me laugh. And they all keep to their own section of New York. And I'm like, I've literally walked across New York in a day. It really isn't that big.
They're like, no, Hell's Kitchen is mine. Harlem is mine. Like, they've done little borders. They're like what do the, how do the criminals feel about this? Do they ever just accidentally stumble into the wrong corner? They're like, oh no, wait, no, sorry,
no,
this
hang
is,
on, I'm not your nemesis.
I'm not your nemesis. Like, it would be a lot easier if they're like, oh God, Daredevil keeps, you know, screwing with me. I'm gonna go to Harlem. Ha ha. and then it's the weird, you know, situation where Daredevil has to call up Luke and be like, yeah, so one of my nemeses is in Harlem, so I don't know, am I allowed to come in and deal with him, or are you going to deal with him, or how are we going to do this?
And then you have to factor in things like Peter Parker's there in Queens.
Yeah, Peter Parker exists in this universe. And actually, that is something that a lot of the cast of the Defenders have said. They said, yeah, we'd really love to have Peter Parker appear in an episode, especially Daredevil, because that would make a lot of sense, because I think the two of them actually do have a bit of a rapport as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're all in the same city, and yet they don't bump into each other or, you know, even go for coffee. I find it really weird. And then we go to the Arrowverse on the other side. So let's hop into the DC train, guys.
Yeah.
Hop on in.
I will have to confess, my knowledge of DC is slightly ropier than my knowledge of Marvel, because it's just never engaged me in quite the same way.
Yeah.
And Arrow, I know very little about. I literally watched the first season. I've never read any of the comics.
Yeah. Well, so the interesting thing about Arrow is that I watched the first few seasons and I kind of gave up because Oliver Queen just annoyed me. in the same way that Batman annoys me, basically, he was just too much. But the interesting thing about Arrow is that it's called the Arrowverse because it was from Arrow the series that you then got the other two spin-offs. So it was in the Arrowverse that Barry Allen was introduced before he became the Flash.
Yeah.
And he then becomes the Flash, and they started the series The Flash. And it's, you know, it's quite nice when Barry initially gets his powers, the first person he runs to Oliver Queen and goes, help, I don't know what to do. And Oliver Queen's like, well, you should be a hero. And Barry's like, thanks, and then leaves. And that's Oliver's pep talk. He is actually quite nice in the way that only Oliver can be, which is, you know, very, very over masculinity and pride and not very communicative. You know, that kind of very boring character. So you have Arrow. And then from both Arrow and from Flash, you get this offset of other characters, including she was Black Canary, you know, Sarah Lance, the Atom, even Snart and stuff like that, even some of the criminals who come from both sides and from both series, which are very separate, and form the Legends of Tomorrow, who have just included Constantine, by the way.
Oh my god.
So I might literally just have to watch the Legends of Tomorrow so I can see Constantine. That's how desperate I've gotten for Constantine content after they cancelled the Constantine show.
I'm not over that.
Yeah, I'm so not over it, but it's still Matt Ryan.
Oh, cool.
It's Matt Ryan playing Constantine, so, which kind of plays into the idea that it, again, might still be set in the same universe. It's obviously not confirmed. But yeah, Constantine was actually introduced in Arrow. Again, he appeared, he helped Oliver out, and then Oliver calls him in when they need to get the soul of one of the characters back. And everyone said, yeah, this was just a one-time thing only. He's not going to come back. And then, what do you know, in Legends of Tomorrow, he's now a regular. So I'm really, really happy. And the problem with the Arrowverse is it is a bit... It's held back a little bit by its viewing age, I think, in that it kind of borders on being something really dark and really good, but is still just a little bit not quite there.
Yeah.
So I have actually mostly given up. I stopped watching. I liked Flash a lot more than Arrow because the Flash characters are actually kind of nice, which makes a big difference having nice characters. But then Flash got a bit too much as well. And I kind of gave up with that. And as I said, I think I'm going to start Legends of Tomorrow simply because Constantine. But in terms of kind of the way that they've handled the universe, I think they've done it really, really well because they do have crossover episodes. I think they, you know, on special anniversaries every season, they have a crossover episode, which is actually really nice. And it makes sense because, yeah, they're both in different cities, which, first of all, is great because you've got Starling City and Central City. But they are still accessible to one another. So every now and again, you have this crossover. And then when an alien invasion happens, you not only have a crossover with the Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow and Flash, but Flash at one point also has a crossover with another TV series which isn't part of the Arrowverse, and that is Supergirl, which is actually set in an alternative dimension.
Oh right, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, it's an alternative universe. It's not actually set in the same universe at all. And they wanted to do a crossover, and the way that they did it is that Flash accidentally, whilst running, jumps into another dimension, because actually that does happen within the Flash universe quite a few times, and he meets Supergirl, and then he's able to get back. So we have now had these crossovers with Supergirl, who's been brought into the Arrowverse on the understanding that she's actually from a different universe. And I think that's really cool, actually. It's a shame about some of the other stuff, but in terms of the way that they handle the universe, I think that they've actually managed to do that better than they did possibly with the Defenders.
Yeah.
And this is me actually saying that all around, the Defenders is better acting, better. Again, I'm not taking a dig at the actors. I think they're all excellent. But it's just the Defenders is better in that terms. But in terms of the way that the universe has been incorporated, the Arrowverse has actually done it in a much more sensible and interesting way, I think.
Cool. Let's talk about our own shared universe. shared universes are one of my big things that I really, really like. And I wouldn't say we actually set out to create a shared universe. It just kind of happened.
Yeah, we didn't, because obviously it was actually just something funny that we started out by just trying to put in references to each other's work.
Yeah,
in our stories.
Yeah, just little Easter eggs. And I think Madeline went, yeah, and if M ever met Kestrel, etc., etc., and we're like, oh, this would happen. And then suddenly we had crossover fiction.
Yeah, but it was just meant to be kind of fan fiction. Like, we weren't serious about it. And I think at the time we thought there's no way that this could work. And then the further along we went, we were like,
actually,
okay, well, let's, you know, we can pretend, for us, we can say it's the same universe, but we're not actually going to, you know, do anything with it. I think that was our next step, was like, in our heads, it'll be the same universe, but we won't, you know, we won't. And then we were like, what if they did meet? And now it's not only what if they did meet, there are consequences within their stories.
Yeah, I mean,
because they've met.
As an example of that, for, you know, fans of both sides, okay, most of you won't have got to read Kestrel yet, but, you know, if you want a tantalising Kestrel hint, in the upcoming unveiled collection, Dead Roads, there is a novella from Craig's point of view, and there is a little Kestrel hint in there.
And it's really funny, because it's a Kestrel hint, which is like, from a book which isn't even finished yet.
Yeah. Madeline needs to get her skates on, really. But
sorry, jeez. But yeah, it is amazing doing a shared universe. And actually, the problem with the shared universe with Jules is that, unfortunately, all of my stories exist within a shared universe. I mean, literally all of them. And I say, I mean, all of them. They're all linked by Kestrel, because Kestrel can and has and will jump through different dimensions at different times, but you can bet your bottom dollar, you know, you can bet your ass that Hamartia Cycle and Kestrel are linked, so that means
well, we do actually have fan fiction that we wrote each other. I mean, I don't know whether we'll have official crossover fiction between Hamartia Cycle and Unveiled, but the fan fiction was lots of fun to write, and I still need to finish one.
Yeah, that was hilarious. For those who don't know the fan fiction, the general premise is that Rufus accidentally ends up in
Yorkshire.
In Yorkshire, as you do. And very quickly ends up naked as well. It's weird. It was only after you'd done it, and I suddenly went, hold on a second. Every fan fiction that's ever been written, Rufus doesn't have his clothes on. And then I went, every book that I've written with Rufus, he's the only character, I think, who you actually see get naked. And he gets naked a lot. Like, he can barely keeps it, because it's funny, because Zachary's there like, no, I'm just going to keep putting clothes on, no one will ever see any part of my skin, and Rufus is like, just, whoo, is it hot in here? He's just constantly stripping. So Jules started writing this fan fiction where Rufus falls into Yorkshire.
Yep.
And Emmeline has to try and get him back, and she quickly realises that Amy is missing. And so I suddenly went, ha-ha, Amy's in Hamartia. So I started writing a companion fan fiction about a very confused Zachary trying to look for his brother and finding this small English girl instead.
Yeah, and it's
and
great.
He's like, well, I guess come home with me. Give you some food. I don't know what to do in this situation.
And it's really good fun, and we should finish those at some point.
To the point that I've not finished the first one, because I couldn't, because you didn't finish your side of it. But I started writing a sequel where then Zachary ends up in Yorkshire, and for him it's been like 13 years, and for Amy and Emmeline it's only been 1 year, and I was having some fun with that one.
Yeah, and there's a Christmas one as well.
There is a Christmas one. There's a Christmas Carol one too. So we have joked shared universe, and we also have a serious shared universe, which we're really looking forward to introducing to you guys.
Because we've pretty much decided that, I mean, Kestrel clearly crosses paths with everyone, because she crosses paths with Em, and she crosses paths with Melanie. My prequel Cold War Paranormal Spy series, which I haven't written yet, we're not sure, but at some point Aunt Mary, as she was then, is going to cross paths with the people in the know, the powers that be from Kestrel, because it's an old organisation.
Yeah, Glavinci will definitely know about Aunt Mary, so it's going to be fun. We're doing a bit of a DC kind of thing here.
Yeah. and there are hints in the Unveiled books. I haven't been explicit about everything, because obviously Kestrel's not available, but if you ever read them both series and you go back and look at some of the unveiled stuff, you'll find little hints to say, oh, hang on a minute, what was Em doing there? She's sort of glossed over it, but actually there's something happening. And, oh, you know, Aunt Mary's being very cagey about that. Does she know something? Yeah. Yeah, it's lots and lots of fun. I love it.
It is also how incredibly confusing also, because Emmeline also takes place in our world, or at least a world where I exist, since she also reads the Marcia Cycle books.
Yeah, just to make it really confusing.
Just to make it really meta.
I love that, and I don't actually want to explain that. I just want to leave it that it's kind of like Peter Dickinson's A Flight of Dragons, whereby he finds himself taken back into this medieval fantasy world where he has to learn how to be a dragon, and then realizes that he, looking at this wizard's library of unfinished books, that his book A Flight of Dragons has actually been finished, and the wizard has a copy of it. But he won't let him look at the end to see how he finished it. And I'm just like, I love that idea. The idea that you're despairing over this book, and yet someone in another dimension has got a copy of your finished book. So you know it gets finished. You just don't know when or how.
I don't know when.
So I'm totally down with them reading the Hamartia Cycle. I mean, if she read it and kind of like, I've already hinted this actually in I Belong to the Earth without meaning to, the whole sort of conversation about where Wuthering Heights takes place, and how if something takes place in the mind of someone who really, really cares about the subject matter and all the readers subscribe to it, does that make it real, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like everything exists out there somewhere.
I just suddenly had a realization, which is that if Rufus comes back, Emmeline will have read the Hamartia Cycle.
So, oh,
she'll
God.
Be like,
oh,
wait
God,
a second.
I know what happens to you, mate. This is bad. This is bad.
You should probably stay with me.
The whole time Rufus is going to be like, are you okay? You know, is everything right? Oh, everything's fine. I can't tell him. I'll break the space-time continuum. Amy warned me about this. Which might be why our Unveiled and Hamartia Cycle crossover fic shouldn't become official. But the rest of it.
Yeah, the rest of it. This is why that I just... It's complicated enough between the two of us, so I just don't know how I can understand why DC and Marvel keep needing to reboot and stuff over and over again.
We've pretty much reached our end there on shared universes for the time being.
We have. And it's time for our dissections.
And in English?
No! I'll do it in muffle, thank you very much. It's time for our Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. And I have been umming and ahhing over three different things, and I'm not sure which one to go for even now. But considering that we have been talking about DC and comic books and stuff like that, I'm going to go ahead and I am going to talk about Titans. So this is a new series. It's not part of the Arrowverse, but I think it is actually linked in, apparently, with the DCU, so the DC Cinematic Universe. So it's set in the same world that the Justice League series is currently set in Batman. I think that might not be the case. Now, I was really weary when I heard that they were making Titans, because I thought, oh no. And I mean weary as in I was tired. Because I just thought, I don't know how you can do this again after Young Justice, Teen Titans, Justice League, the Judas Contract, you know, the things like that. I just didn't know how they were going to do it. I was kind of tired of the whole story, even though I'm a big lover of the character of Dick Grayson. And I actually like the Teen Titan characters. And also, the trailer wasn't that good. I don't know if you've seen it, Jules.
No, I haven't.
So I didn't go in with very high hopes. And boy, I was wrong. I love this series so far. It's really good. It really, really is very good. They've definitely taken a step away from the whole kind of Arrowverse thing. It's very dark. It's very gritty. They've done the humour, but we're not restrained in the same way. And I love this version of the characters. They've gone for a very unique kind of origin story for all of them. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing where they go with it. So my recommendation of the week is Titans, and the full series should be released soon on Netflix, but otherwise you can find it on the DC oh, what's it called? The DC app kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds
And on
like a lot
that
of
note,
fun.
guys, it's really good. It's definitely worth watching. And on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye!
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders, or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.